assembly here at Eastside this evening. Happy to see all those who come out to worship our God. Beautiful song that we just sang, Have Thine Own Way, Lord. As we consider our lesson tonight, as we're talking about living a life without compromise, I want us to think about the words of that song as well, letting God have His way in our lives and being unwilling to compromise His will with our will or the will of the world. We're grateful that you can be here tonight to worship our God, and we're hopeful that our time together will be well spent in examining His Word. The world encourages us to compromise in a lot of ways. And there may be some ways in which it's appropriate to compromise on certain things. I think it's important when we consider this subject matter to realize that there are a couple of different definitions of the term compromise, and also that there are a couple of different areas of life that the idea of compromise might apply to. And so some kinds of compromise are all right, and some maybe not so much. Compromise can be a concession reached by both sides with or without arbitration. So when you concede something, you allow somebody else to have their way or partially have their way. That's a general definition of compromise. It can also be surrendering to that which is wrong, settling for less than your convictions or less than what the Scriptures teach about a thing. And of course, this latter type of compromise is sin. In secular matters or in matters of judgment, as I've said, compromise can be good and needed. At times, even in spiritual matters, there is a place for tolerance and for compromise. I think Paul is talking about that in Romans chapter 14, and certainly in Philippians chapter 2, when each one of us should esteem others better than himself in areas of judgment, we should be willing to allow the other person to have his way, and not just to meet him halfway, but to meet him all the way, so to speak, to let him have his complete way when we're talking about areas of personal judgment or opinion about things. We surrender our rights for the welfare of another or for the rights and conscience of another. And we're happy to do that. But in this lesson, we'll be talking about surrendering our faith, surrendering the truth, and our personal convictions. And anytime we compromise in those areas, it's always wrong and it's a sin. What we're going to do, quite simply, in the lesson tonight, and this is a very simple lesson in a lot of ways, we're going to talk about the nature of compromise as sin and why compromise in the area of faith and conviction, why that is sin. Then we're going to talk about why people make those kinds of compromises. And in my view, when you have understood what the problem is and you've understood why the problem occurs, you've gone a long way to fixing the problem. So that's what we're going to be doing tonight, just looking at what the problem is and why the problem occurs. And hopefully, that'll go a long way fixing the problem of compromise in our lives. Why is compromise a sin? Well, compromise, just to put it bluntly, is disobedience. It doesn't always appear that way, and it doesn't always appear to be such a big deal. When you think about Eve in the garden, the story is well known to us, and we look at that and we say, oh, what a terrible thing that Eve did, and what a terrible thing Adam did by eating of the forbidden fruit after her. And from this standpoint where we are, this side of that history, we can look back on those events and see the mistakes that Eve made, see the mistake that Adam made, and see the temptation of the devil and all of the problems that were involved. It's easy from our viewpoint to cast blame and to point fingers. But you know, sometimes when I'm studying one-on-one with people, I make this point about what went on there in the garden. The reality is that if God had given us personally that law, you just can't eat this one fruit. You just can't have a bite of the fruit of this tree. The reality is that most people today would be saying, what's the big deal? It's just the fruit of a tree. It's just one bite. Why not? And most of us, if we were honest with ourselves, were we put in that situation without the knowledge that we have now, that knowledge of historical hindsight, most of us, were we put in that situation, we probably wouldn't have thought it to be a very great transgression to eat of that fruit. And when you think about it, from a human standpoint, taking a bite of a piece of fruit, that's a pretty small thing. And that's how Eve maybe thought about it. But that one, what do we call that? That one bit of compromise that Eve allowed herself to indulge in fact, sealed the destiny of the world in a lot of ways, introduced sin into the world and death into the world, a lot of other problems. And the reality is, of course, from God's view, I've been talking about how it might look from man's standpoint, but from God's view, that thing that we might just call a little bit of compromise on Eve's part was rank disobedience. And you can go through the scriptures over and over and over again, and you can see instances where, from a human standpoint, it may not have been that big a deal, but from God's standpoint, it was huge. Because He saw what men were seeing as a small compromise, God saw as complete and utter disobedience to His will. You can think of King Saul being told to go and utterly destroy the Amalekites. And the fact that he wipes out most of them, but, you know, spares the king and some of the sheep and so forth. To us, from a human standpoint, we can relate to Saul, can't we? Well, I kind of wiped him out, Lord. I did utterly destroy them, except for just these couple of things. But the prophet tells him that rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. In other words, this is the worst thing. This is as bad as anything you could have done. That thing that he saw as just a small compromise in his mind, perhaps, that he had justified and rationalized as just a small deviation away from the will of God. God saw as complete and utter rebellion. And friends and neighbors, that's what we have to see about compromise. When we're compromising our convictions, when we're compromising what the law of God says to do what we want to do, when we're not letting Him have His will in our lives. In the book of Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 2, Moses said, "You shall not add to the word which I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you." There's just no fiddling with it. There's no loosening it up or tightening it up. There's no changing it. There's no compromising about it. Do what God says. Do exactly what He says. No more, no less than He said. And anything else is disobedience. Compromise in the eyes of God is just disobedience. And it dulls our spiritual lives, doesn't it? You could go in the shed out behind my house right now and you'll find any number of buckets of paint. Well, not really buckets of paint, half full buckets of paint that have been used at various times in the house to paint various parts of the house. Some of them were purchased by me and some of them were purchased by previous occupants, and I think I might have brought some from my old house as well. So there's, I don't know how many, you know, half full buckets of paint there are in that shed out there. One day somebody's going to throw a match in there and the whole thing is going to blow up in living color. But you got all these buckets of paint, and if you really wanted to paint something big, say you wanted to paint a house or something like that, you don't have enough paint of any color to do anything with. But what you could do, of course, is dump all the different dibs and dabs into one big bucket, and then you'd have a huge, you know, bucket of paint that you might could paint a house with. Can you imagine what the color of that would be? It would be, well, I don't want to try it. It would look like something, you know, sick, I think. Just a really sick looking color. A dull color. Compromise does that to us. When we mix what's right and what's true with other things, it dulls us spiritually. And that's what I'm trying to illustrate. Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 12. The writer says, "Do not become sluggish." I think one translation there may say dull. But that's the concept. Be sharp in your convictions. Be sharp in your beliefs and in your obedience. The problem with the Israelites, of course, was that they became sluggish. They weren't sharp in following the will of God. Imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises is the challenge there in Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 12. The other thing about compromise is that it reflects divided loyalties. God can look at that and he can see if you're wanting to compromise his will with something in the world or something in your personal life, if you're wanting to change what he's wanting you to do in some way, big or small, what that says to him is that you're not totally loyal to him, that you're not really meaning it when you sing, "Have thine own way, Lord." That you're not letting him be the potter of your life, that you're not clay in his hands. In Luke chapter 16, Jesus said in verse 13, "No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Mammon, of course, is material things and money, if you will, and we'll get back to that in a little while. But this idea of having divided loyalties is something that God sees when we're trying to compromise, when we're willing to compromise our conviction. Compromising affects others. Affects others in a lot of ways. For one thing, we just mentioned the divided loyalty thing. You know, back in the days of the Roman Empire, Christians were persecuted. They could avoid that persecution by making what some men would have thought to be a pretty small compromise, by just burning a pence of incense to Caesar and confessing Caesar as Lord. They could escape being thrown to the lions or put out in the Colosseum or whatever it might be or hung on a cross. Many of them, of course, chose not to do that and refused to burn that one little pinch of incense to Caesar, refused to make that compromise. Imagine what would have happened had they been willing to make that compromise, had parents stood up and said, "Well, you know, it's okay, just once a year I'm going to go in and to one of the temples that were erected to the Caesars, and I'm going to burn incense there. Just once a year, just a little pinch of incense." And imagine the children growing up in that sort of environment. Being shown year by year, compromise was okay. In Galatians chapter 2, interesting story in the early life of the church, or maybe not so early. Peter came to Antioch in verse 11, Galatians chapter 2. And Paul says, "I withstood him to his face because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles, but when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy." There are two or three things about compromise we might notice here. One is that Peter compromised out of fear, and we're going to get to that in just a minute when we talk about some of the motivation for compromise. But what I want you to notice is that here's a man, Barnabas, the son of exhortation, an encourager of encouragers, someone who was open to all sorts of ethnic groups. He's the one who the church at Jerusalem sent up to check on how things were going when they heard that the gospel was spreading. And Barnabas was an encourager to all men, and yet he's even carried away by the compromise of Peter on this occasion. Your compromise will almost certainly affect others and lead them to making the same compromise or worse. And the thing about compromises is that they lead to more of the same. You compromise in one little area, in one small way, and before you know it, you're compromising in some other area in a bigger way, or the same area in a bigger way, and on and on and on it goes. Someone has said that he who begins life by compromising his convictions is in a fair way of ending his life without having any convictions to compromise. We start just with a little thing here and there, and pretty soon we don't have anything more to compromise because you've compromised everything. In the year 1913, a law was signed into effect in the United States that initiated the federal income tax, 1913. A senator took the floor of the Senate to state his opposition to the bill. He said, and I quote, "If we allow this 1% foot in the door, at some future date, it might rise to 5%. Compromise. If we allow that 1% foot in the door, well, we might be taxed up to 5%. What a horrible thing that would be. They couldn't even imagine that, you know, we're paying half of our incomes practically nowadays go to taxes, I think. But that's how it got started. That's how it got started. Ultimately, what we're doing when we compromise is we're not only disobeying God, but we're just giving the victory over to Satan. In the garden, Satan won. Satan gained that victory because of Eve's compromise. Someone has said that if you give Satan an inch, he'll become your ruler. In 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 18, Paul tells Timothy, "I charge you, son Timothy, according to the prophecies previously made concerning you, that by them you may wage the good warfare, having faith and a good conscience, which some, having rejected concerning the faith, have suffered shipwreck." You give up that good conscience, you allow yourself to compromise against what you know to be right, against what you believe, against what your convictions really are. You allow yourself to compromise, and what's going to happen is, as we said, you're going to wind up with no conviction at all, with no faith at all. Faith is conviction at a high level. You wind up with all of it being lost because of compromise. Well, why, if compromise is so bad, so destructive, not only to our own spiritual lives, why is it, if it's something that, you know, spits in the face of God, so to speak, affects others so negatively, gives Satan the victory, why would anybody ever want to compromise? I think that there are some reasons, five reasons I want to share with you that I believe that people are willing to compromise. And the first of them is simply due to material gain. I read a little story some time ago, actually many years ago. I've used this illustration. It may not mean much to you, but I've seen this happen, what this is describing, many, many times in my life. The story goes like this. There were two men. One was named Financial Gain, and the other was named Principle of Truth. And Financial Gain and Principle of Truth were traveling in opposite directions, and they met on a narrow bridge. One could not pass the other. And so the Principle of Truth laid himself down and allowed Financial Gain to walk all over him. You know how many times I've seen that in this world? Over and over again. Principles of Truth, compromise, or Financial Gain. Some are willing to compromise if it means they're going to get anything out of it at all. There are churches that are unwilling to take a stand against false doctrine or an immoral person because of the monetary resources that person provides. Literally seen that. There are those that are willing to compromise truth so that they can have a better building or larger numbers in that building or social status in a community. Whole churches compromising the truth for those things. There are preachers who are willing to compromise truth to keep their jobs. Individuals who compromise truth to get a bigger tax refund or a sales bonus or just more gas in their gas tank. Paul said it truly when he said that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some, having strayed from the faith in their greediness, pierce themselves through with many sorrows. People willing to compromise for material gain. It happens over and over and over again. And when you're in that situation where you see material gain out here and you're being tempted to compromise some principle of truth, some bit of conviction, some thing that God has told you to do, just realize what the trade-off is and what it is that you're doing, what your motivation really is. Be honest with yourself. People compromise due to family ties. On controversial doctrinal issues like marriage, divorce, and remarriage, or institutionalism, or any number of other doctrinal issues that you might name either in churches of Christ or outside of churches of Christ. I knew a lady in East Texas whose son went off into Seventh-day Adventism as a grown man, and she became a Seventh-day Adventist. I've known whole families to go off into institutionalism because one member of the family, maybe a child, went off into institutionalism. They just followed that. People justify somebody who's living in adultery because they've got a family member who's doing that. And so they change what they believe to be the truth. They say they change what they believe to be the truth about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Among those within denominations, many upon learning the truth choose to continue in the path that they already know is wrong, contrary to God's word, because if they chose the path of truth, it would condemn a family member. I've lost track of the times that I've sat and studied with somebody and showed them what's necessary to do to become a Christian. And they turn and say to me, well, if I do that, I'm saying that my mother, my grandfather, my grandmother, whoever it is, I'm saying that they are not in heaven. If I believe what you're saying and I obey the gospel, I'm baptized for the remission of my sins, I am basically condemning my ancestors or condemning some family member. And so I cannot do what I see is the truth because I love my family member more. That's really what they're saying. And here's really what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 34. He addresses this attitude quite specifically. And he says, do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I've come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be those of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it. He who loses his life for my sake will find it. Our relatives can't mean more to us than the Son of God. Family ties cannot be the motivation for compromise. Too often they are. Sometimes we compromise out of fear. We saw Peter doing that, didn't we, just a minute ago in Galatians chapter 2. That's what the text says. He compromised out of the motive of fear. There are many who would rather compromise convictions than face the consequences of standing for the truth. Because standing for the truth sometimes results in unpleasantry. And so they'll say nothing about that which is wrong, or go along with that which they know to be wrong, or that which they doubt. An example of this might be a young person who participates in some school function or some social function that's questionable or maybe out and out wrong. They know that if they stand for the truth, that they might incur some unpleasant consequences, but they don't want to lose their popularity or their friends, so they go along. Another example might be a church member who's afraid to go to a brother who's in error because he's afraid of the consequences of standing for the truth. We can never let fear keep us from doing the right thing. And if we do, we're fearing the wrong thing. The Bible doesn't tell us not to be afraid of anything, folks. What it tells us is to make sure we're afraid of the right things. In Luke chapter 12, Jesus said in verse 4, I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body and after have no more that they can do. But I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who after he is killed has power to cast into hell. Yes, I say to you, fear him. We need to fear God. And we need to fear him and respect him and understand what an awful thing hell is. We need to have a much greater appreciation of that than we do of anything that man might do to us, no matter what it is. See, our problem is not that we fear. Our problem is that we're fearing the wrong thing and the wrong person. Jesus tells us who we should fear. All kinds of problems come up because we fear the wrong thing or the wrong person. Revelation 21:8 says that the cowardly will have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Cowardly will. What is a fearful thing is a fearful thing to fall in the hands of the living God. That's what's fearful. And we need to keep that in perspective. Compromise. We do it out of a desire to avoid confrontation. I've already alluded to this a little bit. But churches move in the direction of compromise for the sake of unity, they say. We refer to that as unity in diversity. They allow all sorts of things to go on. They want soft preaching and preaching that tickles the ears of people. Softens their stand on immorality and worldliness. There are a lot of Christians who would rather settle for a little bit of compromise than to rock the boat and stir things up because they don't want to be branded as troublemakers. Well, sometimes being branded as troublemaker is not all that bad a thing. Jesus was probably viewed as a troublemaker when he cast the money changers out of the temple, when he defied Jewish leaders on numerous occasions, when he questioned their hypocritical attitudes, and the circumventing of God's law. Paul was labeled a troublemaker in Acts chapter 17. On that occasion, the Jews talked about, you know, those who have turned the world upside down have come here. Here's this big troublemaker. Elijah was called a troubler of Israel by Ahab in 1 Kings 18 and verse 17. Well, the very nature of Christianity involves trying to get along with folks, loving one another. But Jesus, as we already read, said, I didn't come to bring peace but a sword, and the gospel is going to separate folks. And if we accept the gospel and we believe the gospel and we're going to stand for the gospel, we have to understand that. In Matthew 12 and verse 30, Jesus said, he who is not with me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters abroad. We've got to decide whose side we're on. We've got to be willing to fight the good fight, that fight of faith. That leads me to the last reason that people compromise, the ultimate reason that people compromise. It's just a lack of faith. We don't believe God. We don't trust Him. We don't trust His ways. Ultimately, we don't feel He has the power to do His will in our lives or in eternity. That's really what it boils down to. When you look at the Israelites coming up out of Egyptian bondage and all of the compromises that they made, compromises with the law of God, it all got back to a lack of their faith, didn't it? They were not able to enter into the promised land, the Hebrew writer says, because of unbelief. Because of unbelief. There are those whose weak faith causes them to put more trust in physical things than in God and His Word. They may take a job that causes them to compromise their convictions and the time they spend serving and worshiping God. They may lie about something because they don't trust God to provide for their needs. Abraham, you might remember, encouraged Sarah, his wife, to tell less than the whole truth, both to Pharaoh and Abimelech, about her relationship with Abraham out of fear, and that caused problems. And here, a man who is known as the father of the faithful, so to speak. We see that one small chink, that one small place where maybe he wasn't living a life of faith and he compromised. Often churches, because of a lack of faith, turn to human innovations to draw masses of people in. We need to have faith. Trust God. Trust His way. Without faith, it's impossible to please Him. Beware. Beware lest there be in any one of you an evil heart of unbelief, falling away from the living God. Well, these are five reasons why people compromise. As I said at the beginning, if you understand what the problem is, and you understand what causes the problem, you've gone a long way to solving the problem, but not all the way to solving the problem. The problem of compromise, when you see what it is, and when you understand what causes it, you still haven't necessarily solved it. Because the problem of compromise is only going to be solved when men and women make the determination in their hearts to live out their convictions. Compromise will destroy everything that's good. Every hope of having anything that's worthwhile now and in eternity. I read a story about a New York family that bought a ranch out west. They intended to raise cattle. Friends were visiting after they'd been out there a while. They visited and they asked if the ranch had a name. And the would-be cattleman said, "Well, I wanted to name it the Bar J. My wife, she wanted to call it the Susie Q. My son wanted to call it the Flying W. And my daughter wanted to call it the Lazy Y. So, we compromised. We call it the Bar J, Susie Q, Flying W, Lazy Y." And the friend said, "Well, what about all your cattle? Where are they?" And the man said, "None of them survived the branding." Compromise destroys everything that we intended, everything that we wanted, everything that we dreamed of. It looks like a small thing. It looks like, sure, I can do that. And ultimately, our entire dream is destroyed because of compromise. You have to make the decision not to do it. You can see what it is. You can see why you're being tempted to do it. But until you decide in your heart that you're just not going to do it, you're in danger of destroying everything that Christ came to give you. Is there one here tonight who commit to living a life, an uncompromising life for Jesus? If you would, we'd ask you to come now while together we stand and while we sing.